Good day to you. God bless you. Say welcome to the Shepherd's Chapel. Welcome to this family Bible study hour. We're ready to get back in our Father's Word, the book of Job. You know, a father gave us Job as an example as to what life can be like for his election. In chapter 1, we learned that Satan wanted Job bad. Why? Because he didn't have Job. Job was all our father's. He was loyal, faithful. Therefore, Satan stiffened his resistance against Job. And we see an example of what you should be looking for. In other words, don't only look at flesh, that is to say, this age. Look what's just above you in the spirit world. And by that I mean spiritually observe. And perhaps you'll acquire a better understanding of why events happen in your life. Now, Job is completing his answer to the short lesson, the debate given by Bildad. And very soon, and I'll call your attention to it when we get there, Zophar's final lecture debate begins, and unfortunately a copyist has not made note of that. So we'll make note for it, and I will explain as we go along what, in other words, the thumbprint of Zophar on it, so that you have no doubt and can understand. You with companion Bibles, basically it's explained to you in detail in the parallel column. Chapter 27, verse 7, a word of wisdom from our Father, let's go with it. And Job continues in completing his address, his parable. Verse 7, and it reads, "Let mine enemy be as the wicked." Let my enemy be the wicked, all right? Let him be Satan. "And he that riseth up against me as the unrighteous." In other words, Job's saying in a sense here, let me always be on the righteous side. And let my enemies be those that are enemies of God. Verse 8, "For what is the hope of the hypocrite?" There's nothing. "Though he hath gained when God taketh away his soul." In other words, what would you take in exchange for your soul? Well, that's what this earth age is about. You determine that as you live. And God knows what your soul is worth. Unfortunately, in the hypocrite's case, the play actor, one that likes to claim to be religious and really isn't, he doesn't have anything. I mean, he pulls an empty scorecard, and woe to that person. Verse 9, "Will God hear his cry when trouble cometh upon him?" And the answer is no. God's not going to answer the hypocrite. And here he's not answering Job. And many might say, well, that's just not fair. Oh, yes, it is. Job knows his people. God knows his people, and God is very proud of Job. Proud enough to know that Job's not going to knuckle under. Therefore, this one individual was able to prove to the world, those that care to take a moment to read, that you can do it. God will never overload your donkey. In other words, as it is written in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, he will always give you a way out, and he will never place more on you than you can handle. So the more he places on you, basically, when in a situation like this, the more you know that he has faith in you. You can cut it. You can handle it. Verse 10. "Will he delight himself in the Almighty? Will he always call upon God?" Well, it's up to him. It wouldn't do him any good if he did until he repents and changes his way. Now, in this 11th verse, we switch to Zophar. And it'll be his last debate. Many might say, well, it doesn't say that. How do you know? Well, it would mean that the three would have changed Job's mind, because it's obvious Zophar's method of teaching is embedded in until a scholar can certainly tell the difference. So this begins. There is no record other than this of Zophar's third address. And to be balanced, here it is. Verse 11, Zophar speaks. "I will teach you by the hand of God. That which is with the Almighty will I not conceal." I'm going to bring it, I'm going to lay it all on you, Job. Verse 12, behold, all ye yourselves have seen it. Why then are ye thus altogether vain? Why are you so empty, Job? Here sits poor old Job, was one of the richest, most respected men in the community. And here he sits like a vagabond, sore, sick, lost everything. He said, you're empty, Job. It's obvious you're wrong. Well, Job hadn't done anything. Right? He's still innocent. Verse 13. This is the portion of a wicked man with God, and the heritage of oppressors which they shall receive of the Almighty. Now, to show you this is Zophar speaking, turn back with me to chapter 20, verse 29, and you'll find that this is Zophar's speech, you know, his second speech. Verse 29, what did Zophar say? This is the portion of a wicked man from God, and the heritage appointed unto him by God. In other words, he's applying a divine penalty from God that doesn't exist in Zophar's mouth. Okay? So therefore, this is one of the stronger thumbprints of the mind of this person that says, I'm going to teach you from God's word. Well, I'm sorry, he falls a little short. Verse 14, if his children be multiplied, it is for the sword. They're just multiplied so the sword can kill them. And his offspring shall not be satisfied with bread. In other words, they're going to want everything but bread, riches, other people's property. Now, Job's lost all of his children. So this is quite a slam. You understand? 15. Those that remain of him shall be buried in death, and his widows shall not weep. In other words, they're going to be so glad to get rid of that turkey that... Now, you know, this is cruel. This is very cruel as it is spoken to Job. Because actually, this has happened to him. Even his wife said, why don't you just dry up and die? Verse 16. Though he heap up silver as the dust and prepare raiment as the clay. I mean, it's of the quantity of clay. There's lots of clay, you know, and silver, there's not much. He said, if he could be the richest man in the world. 17. He may prepare it, but the just shall put it on, and the innocent shall divide the silver. They're going to split up what you got, Job. Job was innocent. They are the ones that are playing God and judging him. 18. He buildeth his house as a moth and as a booth that the keeper maketh. Like a watchman in the vineyard, okay? Lots of vineyards. 19. The rich man shall lie down, but he shall not be gathered. One day he'll lie down, the next day he'll be gone, okay? Not again. He openeth his eyes, and he is not. It's all over. Well, Job could kind of open his eyes at one time, and he was respected. He had everything, a good family. He lay down, opened his eyes again, and he had nothing. It was all gone. And what this turkey's implying is that also when they die, they're nothing. And that's true. These are true words. But you see, it has nothing to do with Job. It's not going to help Job. 20. Terrors or disasters take hold on him as waters. A tempest stealeth him away in the night. A storm takes him. I imagine Job could relate to that. 21. The east wind carrieth him away, and he departeth. And as a storm hurleth him out of his place. I mean, he's out of his place means his home. He's and here sits Job. Home, place, children, cattle, everything gone. 22. For God shall cast upon him and not spare. He would fain flee out of his hand. Sounds more like the works of Satan than God, quite frankly. Verse 23. Men shall clap their hands at him and shall hiss him out of his place. Amazing, after the fact of what's happened to Job, that these people fit their own penalties to what appears visually to be the situation with Job. Excuse me. Be careful if you start judging other people. Always keep this one thought back in your mind. I shall not make a judgment until I have heard both sides. That means from the party you're judging, if you intend to. It isn't our right to judge. That's God's job. So you want to be very careful in this. I'll just tell you something. People that will listen to gossip and take it for truth are most miserable indeed, because they set themselves up for their own stumbling. They become their own stumbling block, and their mind is filled with information that is not factual. So never let anything be anchored in your mind that you haven't checked out the facts and grounded yourself in truth. And then you will be a lot less embarrassed in life. And you will be able to ascertain or discern people, events, times, prosperity. You'll do a lot better all the way around if you follow that advice. Unfortunately, Job's friends don't follow that advice. They've made their minds up. They convicted him. Even though they're hearing the other side and Job is crying innocent, they don't believe it. Chapter 28. Surely, Zophar continues, surely there is a vein for silver, for the silver, and a place for gold where they find it. This is kind of going to be a little rundown on mortal man, you know. He's smart enough that there's a vein of gold out there and he'll prospect till sooner or later he'll pick his way into it. Two, iron is taken out of the earth and brass is molded out of the stone. Now think about the year this is written. You know, you want to know ingenuity of man, though he is mortal man. I mean, we're reading one of the oldest books in the Bible, and we're already talking about smelting iron, all right, and brass. Verse 3. He setteth an end to darkness. In other words, he's got a light. You ever seen a miner's light? And searcheth out all perfection. He goes in there and he looks and as he digs to hunt for that vein, the stones of darkness and the shadow of death. I mean, he's in the pit. Puny man has a way of finding hidden riches. But can puny man find hidden truth? That's the question, okay? I take that right from the enemy's, from the friend's so-called mouth. Verse 4. The flood breaketh out from the inhabitant. Even the waters forgotten of the foot, they are dried up, they are gone away from men. In other words, man is even smart enough that when he digs his tunnel and water comes flooding in, he's smart enough that he'll channel it out. Oh, he's got it up here. Mortal man can do it. Just tunnel or channel it right out of there and dry up the hole and keep searching for those hidden riches. Verse 5, as for the earth, out of it cometh bread, and under it is turned up as it were fire. In other words, man is enriched from the earth, both from above and below. Why should it not? Inasmuch as our bodies were fashioned from earth, from clay. We're earth people. We depend on it. The earth is certainly not your mother, but certainly you can understand why certain people call it Mother Earth. In a sense, if you want to, we could go use the analogy, the womb of the earth. The earth is the womb of mortal man civilization. Verse 6, the stones of it are the place of sapphires. And it hath dust of gold. I mean, it's there if you look. Man forces the earth to feed him from above and below, all right? It's to enrich him. 7. There is a path which no fowl knoweth, and which the vulture's eye hath not seen. In other words, nature itself, they don't have the ingenuity to do this. I could find a little argument with this if you've never known a pocket gopher or a few other things. 8. The lion's whelps have not trodden it, nor the furious lion passed by it. In other words, man digs into unknown places. 9. He putteth forth his hand upon the rock, the flint, the quartz. He overturneth the mountains by the roots. Boy, with man's ingenuity in this generation, they do overturn mountains, especially up in the gigantic coal fields and so forth. Verse 10. He cutteth out rivers among the rocks, and his eye seeth every precious thing. He knows how to channel the water out to make his own rivers. He knows how to find those hidden riches. But how dumb is he that he cannot find wisdom? That there's a little difference in wisdom of mining and true wisdom. That is to say, wisdom from our Father on why things are as they are. You see, it is only natural that he who created the gold and silver and hid it, so to speak, in the natural order of things — that's no argument with science, all right? So don't let any scientific mind get carried away here. All things are at the hand of God. So naturally, to seek true wisdom of why it is, you must go to he who formed it, he who created it. And verse 11, as we continue. He bindeth the floods from overflowing, and the thing that is hid beneath forth to light, brings it forth to light. He's able to control things. 12. But where shall wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? Just always remember this. All wisdom comes from God. I'll say it one more time, and don't ever forget it. All wisdom comes from God. He has written you a letter giving you a set of instructions on how to make these flesh bodies operate successfully. Have you read it? Verse 13. Man knoweth not the price thereof, that's to say of wisdom, neither is it found in the land of the living. In other words, in this flesh, mortal life. You're not going to find it in flesh. Why? Because wisdom comes from above. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7 is the greatest one verse to strengthen you and tell you where to begin. All right? To find wisdom. Proverbs chapter 8, even wisdom speaks. Have you ever heard her? Then read the 8th proverb, and you will hear wisdom speak. How many can receive her? I don't know. 13. Man knoweth not, verse 14. The depth saith, it is not in me. And the sea saith, it is not in me. Man can dig all he wants to, and you're not going to find it there. You can go to the bottom of the ocean. You're not going to find it there. You will find life. You will find certain wisdom, and you can even become wise of the depths, but it's not. You're not going to find true wisdom there. That comes from God. 15. It cannot be gotten for gold, neither shall silver be weighed for the price thereof. In other words, I don't care how wealthy you are, you cannot buy wisdom. You must go to the source, which is Yahweh, the living God himself, and through the sweat of the brow, through the touch of the Holy Spirit, through the absorption of his word, which is truth, which is wisdom, then you will purchase wisdom simply for the taking. But it does require work. 15. It cannot be gotten for gold, whether neither shall silver be weighed for the price of it. 16. It cannot be valued with the gold of Ophir. That's the highest price gold there was. With the precious onyx or the sapphire. 17. The gold and the crystal cannot equal it. And the exchange of it shall not be for jewels of fine gold. Wisdom has only one source. It is so, you know, it is such a simple thing to know where to go for wisdom, but it would seem like not too many people are wise enough to wish to seek wisdom. For wisdom, my dear one, many people let the gold short stop them. That's all I need is the gold. Just give me all the gold and all the silver, and I'll take care of the wisdom alone. No, you won't. You won't be smart enough to hang on to it, number one. Because without wisdom, you will never find peace of mind. And gold cannot, wealth will never bring you peace of mind. It really has very little to do with it. Verse 18. No mention shall be made of coral or of pearls, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. You're not going to find it in the water or the land. 19. The topaz of Ethiopia shall not equal it, neither shall it be valued with pure gold. Does not even come close. Why? If you have wisdom, you can gain monetary valued things. If you do not have wisdom, you can't hang on to them. You wouldn't know. You won't really know how to enjoy them, even if you receive them. If you're not careful, wealth can get you in a lot of trouble if you don't know how to really appreciate it and use it. 20. Whence then cometh wisdom? Question. Where does it come from? And where is the place of understanding? And I'm sorry, wisdom is of God alone. You know, I have to say one thing. Old Levi's here. He's not doing too bad. He's giving some real straight facts. But do you know something? I'm sorry, as great as the truth is, and this happens to be truth that he's speaking here, it has absolutely nothing to do with Job. That is to say, solving Job's problems. When you set yourself up as a counselor, be able to focus on the entity that you're supposed to help. It doesn't do to, it's not going to do any good for you to go off with long sayings of what is this and what is that, though they are beautiful, though they are worthwhile, and yes, in this case, even true. It doesn't tell us what's wrong that Job is having, what is Job's problem, for Job had wisdom, that's declared. Amazing. He that speaks of wisdom has so little of it oft times. Verse 21. Seeing it is hid from the eyes of all living and kept close from the fowls of the air, that's to say heaven, the fowls of heaven. 22, destruction, there goes that Abaddon again in the Hebrew tongue, one of Satan's names. And death say, we have heard the fame thereof with our ears. We've heard of it only by report. Christ knew wisdom. Christ taught wisdom. 23. God understandeth the way thereof. You can rest assured he does. And he knoweth the place thereof. Only he can reveal it. Only God can reveal that truth. But don't you ever sweat it. God can. There are no keys that lock wisdom from the man, woman, or child that cares to seek it, repentant of God. And before God, rather, and searching, it will not be withheld from that one. Verse 24, for he looketh to the ends of the earth and seeth under the whole heaven. In other words, God sees the whole platform, the depths, the land, the stars, the heavens, the universe. 25, to make the weight of the winds. Think about that. Have you ever thought about weighing the wind? and he weigheth the waters by measure. In other words, he has adjusted even the most unstable things. Say that again. God has even adjusted the most unstable things, the wind, the water. 26. He put boundaries there that control it, basically. 26 reads, when he made a decree for the rain and a way for the lightning of the thunder, naturally the lightning causing the thunder, 27, then did he see it and declared it. He prepared it, yea, and stretched it out. I mean, it's everywhere. 28, and unto him he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, this would better be translated the reverence of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. You know, and he's practically quoting at least a part of Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7, which is a very true statement. But again, Job is as innocent as a newborn babe. He has repented for all of his sins, though he had no major ones. He even paid sacrifice for his children's sins that he didn't know about. Didn't even know if they had sin, but he paid anyway because he loved and trusted God. How precious it is that our Father is able to prepare wisdom and give it, regardless of how much gold you have or silver, but for those that love him, that care for him, meaning what? Reverencing. What is reverencing? It means loving. Loving, respecting, and caring for God is the beginning of knowledge and the beginning to understanding. Why? Why is that? Because if a person could only just let it be settled in their mind, loving and respecting God makes his day. It pleases him. You are doing the function that God created man for, to pleasure him, to keep him company. You know, it is strange, and I'm not being sacrilegious, but man has this old saying, it's lonesome at the top. And really, that's true. Well, you can't get any nearer the top than God is. And because some people like to play church, that's not keeping him any company. He abhors that. People that play church or play Christian, and they're not for real getting into God's Word. They might as well be out shooting the numbers or something, if you're going to take man's word and never get back into the Word of God. There's no wisdom in man's words and his tradition, certainly. So it is lonely there for him, and that's why he really blesses those that reverence him. So, Father, I love you. Then he begins to bless you, and you see wisdom at work. Your wisdom of reverencing him releases his wisdom to you and causes you to thirst for it, and you begin to grow. It changed your life. Chapter 29, Job takes back over. This will basically, for the three friends, be the summation of Job's so-called commitment. He will answer the three, and that will conclude the teaching with the three. It'll cover the next three chapters, and we're not going to go into them today. We'll pick it up in the next lecture. Don't miss it. It will be Job's summation, and it's beautiful. It really is. And it has one missing ingredient, and that's the answer. And yet, for the wise, the answer is there. But then, don't prejudge Job too rapidly, for God has already told us the answer in chapter 1. So we have a considerable advantage to see the answer. So Job will answer the three. We've had it with the three, but hey, we'll have a fourth show up on the scene. And then we will have God himself. Then we will begin to understand the beauty of this book. Did his three friends help him? No. They were not able to. And if you learn any one lesson from this, if you ever have a great deal of trouble, it is good to have true friends. These were not. And it doesn't hurt to turn to true friends. But first, turn to the one that is closest to you, and that is God, for your answers. He'll give them to you. So we've had to wait many, many chapters. And we've heard from the three friends, we've heard from Job, all sorts of input. But we haven't heard from God yet. So don't miss any of the remaining chapters in this great book. The lesson of happiness on earth, basically, is entwined therein. Don't miss it. All right, bless your heart, you. Listen a moment, won't you please?